Hey, welcome 2014.
Yeah.
Notice I have a new co-anchor.
Yes.
I'm actually super pumped about this. So actually, let's do the official welcome. Paul, welcome to the show. Welcome to Breakpoint.
Thank you.
Everyone, in case you don't know Paul, everyone, Paul LaBears, LaBears, Paul, everyone. So yeah, he's my official new co-host.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. We're starting 2014 full of energy, fresh, crazy, cool new ideas, especially today's because, you know, when Paul came to me and said, you know, today we're going to do some cross-platform development with Visual Studio, and I'm like, whoa, whoa, hold on. Visual Studio, at least for me, being, you know, the older school, shouldn't even say older, that's terrible, the old school .NET type of thing,
yep.
Visual Studio equals .NET.
Microsoft, yeah, absolutely.
Right? And then, of course, now it's like everything .NET and everything else.
Yeah, there's a lot that's changed, and it's exciting. It's very exciting.
Mind-boggling. The other day I was playing around. Someone showed me Python tools for Visual Studio.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Right? And all of these crazy things that are coming into the environment, which, of course, now means that as we're going through and we're introducing new developers into Visual Studio, not everyone is necessarily going to want to use TFS proper like we used to know it, or back in the day, Visual Studio, Visual SourceSafe. Am I even allowed saying that?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I kind of feel like SourceSafe was one of those things where you kind of had to, it was like a necessary evil. You had to use it, but it was like...
It was used beyond its limitations, let's put it that way. SourceSafe had we won't get too much into it, but SourceSafe was a great product for code bases that weren't necessarily very large or sprawling,
right,
or needed weird sort of source version control sort of management. If it was a straightforward sort of project, it was a good product for that, but
right,
obviously the world's moved on from that.
Yeah, it's like, okay, now we're, what, 20 years later?
Not that much, yes.
Okay, 15 years.
Yeah, maybe 10 that. Years. 10, 15, let's say that.
And now here we are, we have everybody ideally using Visual Studio regardless of what platform they're using, so of course now everything has to kind of catch up and just become that much better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So last time we had Adam on the show, and he was kind of going through some release management stuff, some ALM stuff in general, but it was kind of more so towards what we would traditionally know as development in Visual Studio. So Paul says, well, okay, now I have to rock everybody's boat and do something cool and completely different. So before we go into the whole cross development thing, I'm assuming you're going to give us some sort of foundations as to what it is that we're going to go through.
Funny you should say that, because that's the very first slide I have, as you can see right there.
He's looking at the screen.
I
should be looking at you guys.
I should be.
It's almost like this is his first time doing it.
Yeah, it isn't actually. It was a rookie mistake that I shouldn't have made. So.
Fine. So you know what? Let's bring this on. Let's do this.
Okay. So thanks, Jonathan. Let's talk a little bit about where things are going, just to set the stage, because I think that actually makes a lot of sense. We're finding that software is no longer your traditional monolithic, DVD, CD, whatever it is that you have, or even from the web, and you just click run and then it installs. Things are a lot more complicated and things are a lot more diverse. If you think about what you as an IT manager or as a developer or a development manager, someone who has customers that requires your software, you're being asked to do things that you typically haven't maybe been doing before in the past. So the first idea around reaching any device of any platform for any customer, this is all about, we're talking about no longer just having PCs. We're talking about no longer just a browser. We're talking about devices, Bring your own device is a very, very interesting and prevalent sort of idea around many organizations today. And the intent of the users of your software is that it should work anywhere that they're actually using it on, regardless of device. That in itself creates complexity that I'm sure you can attest to being very, very difficult to manage. We also have to do things at scale. And gone are the days where, you could have this thing where even in the enterprise, say for example, where you say, well, we got to spin up this system because the line of business is asking for X. And then you basically start the process of provisioning a server. It takes a couple months maybe to get everything set up and then patched and everything up to speed. And then you have to do that across multiple different environments. the business generally doesn't work that way anymore. Things are becoming hyper-competitive, and the edge that IT can give to the business or IT can give to their customers is basically time to market and the ability to scale efficiently across that as well. So how do you manage that? And that's a really difficult thing as well. And then the third thing that we're seeing is the cloud. Now, the cloud is interesting, and JR knows all about the cloud because he's our cloud guy. But some people are reticent to really think about it because of various different reasons. Some are good, some are not, you know, really relevant anymore. But we won't get into all that. That's probably a different discussion altogether. But the cloud is here to stay, and it's here to provide you with a lot of really great ability to do that scale or to reach any device on any platform. There's so many things that you can do in the cloud, and Windows Azure, which is Microsoft's cloud platform, is just, it boggles my mind every day how much the team is actually putting into this and how much value it can bring to you as a customer of ours so that you can deliver value to your customers or even internally within your organization.
So since you brought it up,
yeah,
of course I have to go there.
Of course.
Cloud, okay, Windows Azure.
Yep.
Again, one of those things where very much so beforehand it was all, or even still people have this perception of Windows, mm-hmm. right? So therefore Windows Azure has to be .NET.
Yep.
Which of course is not the case as well. So similar to all this discussion that we're doing or that we're going to be doing today, it's actually just as important to realize that even though it's Windows Azure, it's a Microsoft Cloud platform, and it's tied into Visual Studio or whatever, but everything that Paul's going to be talking about with regards to the cross-platform and cross-language in this case applies there as well.
Yeah.
Right. Which is kind of an interesting mix because it's one of those things where we wanted to make sure that it was just as much cross whatever
yep.
as everything else.
Absolutely.
And so it was an evolution to get there,
mm-hmm.
and now we're there, and now we're good. Now the tooling with Visual Studio 2013 is kind of caught up because,
yep.
wow, cloud stuff in Visual Studio 2013 has been like phenomenal.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
But
yeah.
I had to just put that in there because everyone has this perception that as soon mm-hmm. as you say cloud and as soon as you say Microsoft, as soon as you say Windows Azure, all of a sudden, everybody thinks, well, yeah, okay, fine, just .NET apps. And
exactly.
Yep. And it really does do many, 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 many others.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely right. You know, it's interesting when you think about how IT is changing, and the cloud is a great example of how that actually works. Now, let's talk a little bit about the cycle. Now, organizations, very large to very small, typically in the past had done more monolithic releases, waterfall methodologies and things like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. And in fact, our tooling does support that very, very well. But what we're finding is that a lot of teams within organizations, as well as, you know, like new app developers and things, they're adopting what's called the agile methodology for delivering software. So small iterations, bring those iterations to production quickly, and so that you add incremental value at a very, very quick pace. And in fact, even our teams internally within Microsoft are doing that. For example, the Visual Studio team and themselves, they've actually quickened their pace to do cadence releases of, you know, anywhere from 4 months to 6 months, where it used to be 1 year to 2 years. This allows us to provide the functionality to our customers that they need as soon as possible, yet at the same time not sort of compromise the actual system that's involved as well. So this is actually really, really interesting, and we're finding a lot of people are adopting it. And Agile is one of the central methodologies that is provided within Team Foundation Server, which is more than just our version control management suite. It's actually a holistic suite of things that I'm going to show you a little bit about of everything, just to give you an idea. But if you think about who's involved, right? You have business owners who are basically your stakeholders or your analysts that say, these are the people that are going to be using the applications. So they have obviously probably the most important say as to what the software is going to do, because the intent of software is to be a tool to allow users to get to an answer that they need. To enable that, you obviously have your developers and your testers, which I'm sure a lot of you already are. And then beyond that, we have operations management. So once the software has been released, it's got to be managed within production or whatever environment that it's in, right? All these people are required to actually make a good software release work. And the only way that's going to work is through collaboration. And we talk about social, we talk about all these types of things, and it's more than just like a, oh, we're all friends and we're on Facebook type of thing. No, collaboration is all about communication, making sure everyone is up to speed with the release. What are the bug fixes that are going into a release? You know, how is this gonna affect performance? All, whatever it is that you can think of, all that stuff has to be communicated between stakeholders, business analysts, end users, operations management, developers, testers, you name it, all those people have to be involved. So I'm just gonna go through this because don't really need to see that. Now, this is a busy slide, but it's actually a pretty good one, and it's one that I like to show people when I'm talking about Team Foundation Server, because Visual Studio really is, if you think about it, what you see here. The purple side is basically our on-premise solution. This is the one that you get from MSDN if you have an MSDN license and you install on your local premises servers or in your data center, whatever it is. And as you can see, there's an awful lot there, right? So there's everything from lab management to load testing, SharePoint development and integration with SharePoint for documents that might be associated with it. Project server is another one. So if you use MS Project and you have a lot of projects on the go, a lot of companies are using Project Server to manage those projects. Built-in integration into Team Foundation Server. It's an amazing thing. And then System Center for release management and a few other things as well. It's really, really great. So all those types of things are there. Now, the blue component, the component on the right, is actually new. Well, not new as in like today new, but over the past year and a half, we've sort of been iterating this. This is really exciting. And the reason why it's exciting is because it offers you new choice. So we talked about on-premise capabilities for Team Foundation Server. Well, guess what? You get this in the cloud now too. So the beauty of something like this is the fact that you do not have to own or provision servers to manage the infrastructure supporting your version control and your lab management and all those types of things. You can actually do all this in the cloud that Microsoft hosts for you if this is an option that is interesting to you. So basically, almost anything that you can do on the on-premise, you can do within the online version now, which is great, and we're iterating that. So it's not parity yet, but it's getting very, very close. So as you can see, there's all sorts of things from build service and load testing. So you can even do load testing in the cloud, which is interesting. Application insights, which I'll talk about, and then things even like code editing. So Visual Studio, the actual IDE in the cloud, which is kind of cool. So we got a early beta that isn't quite released yet that's coming, and this is exciting. It's going to provide you with the ability to even do some coding on the phone on if you're on the train on the way home or something like that, and you need to make a very quick fix to a file. You could actually do that on your phone, which is kind of wild in a lot of ways. So let's talk about planning. Now, I'm not going to go through this very much because I sort of talked about this already, right? So who are the people that are involved with actually building software? What are the sort of planning assets that you have? So what is a backlog? So what are the features that you're trying to drive? And then how are you driving out those features in incremental deliveries, finding out and prioritizing which features are most important, and then chunking the set of features that you feel are reasonable to actually deliver in a certain time frame. That's really what this is all about. And this always continues. This is what Agile is all about, right? So it's never ending. You're learning through the process as well, and you're actually providing a continuous cadence, as you can see right here. And then we talked a little bit about portfolio management from a project server standpoint. So that's the other thing that's pretty cool about this, is that Team Foundation Server provides you with a lot of goodness around integrating into your project plans so that, whatever your project management office, your PMO, for example, has that is sort of dictating and managing, the tasks at a macro or even a micro level for your project, you can actually integrate that into Team Foundation Server or Visual Studio Online, regardless of which one you're using, to really sort of set up the project for success so that everybody understands where things are at without the project manager having to go to everybody's desk. Because I'm sure everybody's familiar with that. I played that role as well, where you're the project manager and you say, how many bugs did you find today? Okay, let me write that down, two and things like that, for example, as Jonathan says. I don't know why he says there's two bugs, but there are two bugs.
I was just playing for fun because I remember back to my old days,
yep,
where we would have PMs come,
yeah,
and all the developers would sit together and the PM comes, and as soon as you see the PM walking down the hall, everyone's like, okay, hide.
Yeah.
Right. Now the point of that was not because we had something to hide or because we weren't doing our work. But what was more important about that what got to me was how much of a time waster is that for the person to have to come and literally ask every single person, hey, what is sure you can do this by email, mm-hmm. right? But everybody has a gazillion emails coming into their inbox, and so in order to short circuit that and get you the answer right away, so some use instant messaging, some show up right in front of you, and well, let's just say, and I don't know if you guys know this, but there's stats that were shown, right, that every time you're interrupted, for every minute that you're in, whenever you're interrupted, it takes 10 minutes to get back on task.
Yeah, it sounds right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so what happens is, if you can facilitate all of that, regardless of what kind of development team you're on, through something like this, well then, you know, here we are. Right? I love going through these foundations, even though I know I've heard it a billion times, maybe you guys have heard it a couple of times as well, but it's nice to always refresh, because ALM is one of those, it's like HD. Everything has become HD, right? And so ALM has become, you know, granted, defined application lifecycle management, but everyone has a different definition.
Absolutely.
So I love it that you start with that, because, you know, just to make sure that we're all on the same page, we're all ready to go. And of course, now that we're done foundations, you can't go on without a demo.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what we're going to do next. Now, before I go to the demo, though, it's interesting you mentioned that. Like, productivity is killer, right? There's a stat that I read somewhere recently. The fact that we aren't productive. I mean, that's just the way it is, right? So I think there was a stat out there that says in an 8-hour day for a developer, for example, they only get 2 hours of good code in,
really?
In that, you know, because they're interrupted by, you know, the project manager having to ask for a status report. The integration of the tools is actually very, very important for increasing the level of productivity, because you're not stopping the developer from actually doing what he or she is supposed to be doing, which is coding, for example, or you as a test manager or a tester in general, right? It's all integrated in so that people can go to the Team Foundation service online or on premise and say, where are we with the project? And you can get the view right away. And it's a beautiful thing. It really
or the ones that I really love, the ones, the dev teams that have the gigantic screen that everybody can see, and you see the dashboard.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
So
let's show you a little bit of that. So we're going to go to my virtual machine, because I have a sort of a setup here. So I'm just going to minimize all this stuff, because we've got a whole bunch of things to show you. Okay. So I'm going to go to the web portal for a fake project that we have here. So for example, the Fabricam portal here. So if you're familiar with anything with Microsoft, it's either Contoso, Fabricam, Northwind, or whatever. And this is basically a project, and it's a .NET project, but what's important here to understand is that it's version control, and TFS doesn't matter what it is. It can be text files, it can be Java, it can be PHP, it can be Ruby, it can be .NET. Whatever it is that you are trying to provide for version control, we do support it. So that's really, really important. We'll get a little bit into that as well later. So this is basically the dashboard that you see. So you can see right here, we're in iteration 3, which was July 1 to 12. So this is obviously a demo environment, because the date that we actually recorded this was January 22nd.
No, it's actually January 31st today, Paul, but that's
31st,
okay.
You're right. What am I thinking? I'm a week behind. So, anyways, as you can see here, we have 49 of 56 hours that is available to us remaining. So, as you can see, we burned 7 hours. So, right away, you can see that. And we also have a burn down chart. So, let's take a look at how this looks. Well, this is really interesting, because based on the tasks that have been sort of gotten to production or have been completed, you know, you can see where you are with the current iteration for the features that you're implementing. And as you can see, this straight line is basically your ideal trend, so what's expected to be the case. And you can see that we're being a little bit overworked here. So right away, as a project manager or a team leader, whatever it is that you are, or even a business stakeholder, they can go into this and go, oh no, okay, so we're overworked. Obviously something's going wrong. So you can take a look as well. Let's take a look at the hours. And you can see here are the basically the work items and the features that are being the product backlog that's actually being delivered. So some of them are features, as you can see right here, and then some of them are bugs that are being fixed as well by the color coding. And this color coding can be sort of managed by whatever you want. Now let's take a look as well at who's doing work. So you take a look at work being assigned to. So we have Annie Harriman and Brian Harry and Brian Keller and Julia. And you can see right here that both Annie and Brian Harry are being overworked. So they're doing overtime, or they've got more assigned to them than they actually have available to them during the day. While as we have Brian Keller and Juliana, who are, have cycles that they can actually spare. So maybe it's a good idea to offset some of the things that are being done by these two to Brian and Julia instead, which is actually something very, very interesting. Now let's take a look at the board. So you can see here, we have a whole bunch of things. So in iteration three, we have a number of things to do that are not necessarily in there, but we do have in progress. So I can actually move things from, you know, in progress to done. So just drag and drop, and it's saving it. So this is all being sort of managed within the actual, within the Team Foundation service, everything. So as you can see right here, it's already done. So we're just gonna put that right back, or actually we'll just leave it there. So you can see right away that there's a whole bunch of different things. And you can again see capacity, and we'll see right here. I mentioned before you have Annie and Brian who are being overworked, but as you can see here, you know, capacity per day, you can sort of I assign this to the number of hours that they have available per day to actually drive this. So regardless of what technology you're using, whether it's a web project, an iOS app, or whatever it is that you're doing, or even a .NET project, all this stuff is still relevant, right? So that's all right there. So let's go back home, and I'll show you a few other things here. So for example, we had the product backlog, which we sort of saw before. So there's a bug, and there's three product backlog items here that were there. So I can open them up and take a look and see what it is. So there's some meta information. There's an effort estimate that you can assign. So basically, this is a number that you can basically define what that effort means, whether it's days, hours, or a complexity, or whatever it is that you have, you can do that. And then also business value and things. And then you can also type descriptions, add storyboards to things if you wanted to, test cases, and then even assign tasks. So you can do those types of things. So all this is sort of managed inside the tool itself. And then if you take a look, we also can take a look at developers and what they've done. So we actually have chain sets. So as something gets checked in from the developer, you can see all these different change sets. And I'm going to actually go into change set 58, for example. And you can see right here, it gives you a little bit of a, you know, what's actually been changed here. So let me just scroll over. I know it's kind of tough to see, but basically you see all that. Now the interesting thing is this was all stuff that was new. So I'm actually going to go back and we'll go back to the change sets. Change set 61, for example. As you can see, there's stuff that's been modified or removed and things. And I can actually, interesting, add a comment. So you can add a comment to this and say, you know, for example, good thing this was fixed. It broke the last build. Or whatever it is that you're trying to do. And then you can reply to it if you want and everything. So you can actually have a conversation about specific code changes within the actual application. And these don't show up within the code. It's all within Team Foundation Server so that it doesn't sort of clutter things either. So this is actually a really great sort of thing that allows you to provide some great sort of feedback and have that conversation within the team, which is all part of the collaboration, if you will. Now, one of the other things that I want to show you is really interesting. And we'll go very, very quickly through this. Is we have a team room. So the team room is new to 2013. So Team Foundation Server or Visual Studio Online, where you can see this is basically some people like to call it a chat room, but it's actually more than that. A lot of people see this and say, well, it's just like instant messenger. Why would I care? Well, there's the idea where, you know, if somebody leaves a team, and Jonathan and I like to call it the hit by the bus syndrome, right? So if somebody gets hit by a bus, like suddenly, and leaves a team, right? How do you actually manage that, you know, from a transition standpoint, or understand what he or she was working on?
Okay, so for the record,
yes,
you call it hit by the bus.
I do.
I call it win the lottery.
Win the lottery.
Okay, see how this works?
Yeah.
Glass half empty, glass half full. I'm just saying. Yes, the outcome is the same. the advantage here is that I'm being all, you know, nice and optimistic.
Yes.
And positive, and you're just being like
Debbie Downer. Yeah. Okay.
I was gonna say realistic.
There you go.
We're not gonna get into the statistics of
No.
What's more likely to happen of the two, but you guys get
exactly.
The point.
We get the point. But as you can see here, right? So like the win the lottery scenario, so somebody leaves a team and all of a sudden, you know, you can look through their email records, you can look through the code, but sometimes it's very difficult to find out things. So this is actually a living record of the project. And it's an amazing thing because it's not just what you or myself might actually put into this from a conversation standpoint about the code, about the project itself, but also what builds, you know, what tasks. So I can actually go to this, see task 237, I can go to it actually within Team Foundation server and take a look at it. And you can see, for example, there's some, you know, things around this that Julia has actually done. So it's a very, very handy tool for managing expectations and really understanding how healthy the actual project is. Now, there's a few other things that I'm going to show you very, very quickly, like code, for example, we saw. So I'm going to go to the main branch in this, and as you can see, there's a fabricam.fiber.callcenter. So you can actually go to the actual code and things like that here. So if I scroll down, you can see, for example, there's a global.asax.cs file, and you can take a look at it, you can download it, you can do some comparisons between different builds and things like that, so there's that. So all this stuff is available to you, which is actually pretty cool. Now, the other thing that's available is things like build sets. So you can actually see you know, what's been built and find out what the issues are over the period of time. So if I take a look at this build, so you can see it was triggered by Brian Keller, who I'm logged in as right now, and for a change set, and you can see what's here. And you can actually take a look at some of the details, right? So you can take a look at the builds and all those types of things. So there's a log, so you can get the log right away here, and then diagnostics around it as well. So you can see in the build process, you know, it gives you how long each component of the build actually took. So you can find out if there's issues, and you know, scroll down all the way through, and you can see there's lots of stuff there. So, you know, if you did run into an issue, you can see right there, we actually had a test run failed. So you can find out right away what actually failed in the build as far as like some of the smoke tests that you're doing as well, which is obviously very interesting. Which brings us to tests. So you can actually create your test plans and your test cases. And in this case, we don't have any set up here, but there's another project in this demo that I have that I'm not gonna show right now because it's actually, we're gonna run out of time if we do. But I'm gonna show you some other things around that. The cool thing about this is that test plans are associated with the work items that you've actually created. So you can create work items, create test cases and test plans that are associated to it, and run those automatically or, you know, manually, however it is that you want. So there's lots of really, really great integration there as well. So the one last thing that I want to show you, which is actually quite cool, if I can get to my... Let's get to... Where's my charms? I'm trying to get to my charms here. There we go. All right, if I go to Excel, for example, I'm gonna open up Excel. Now, when people ask for reports, and you know, as a developer or as a test manager or somebody's, you know, somebody in management might say, can you tell me where we're at? And they may not necessarily know how to deal with TFS as a tool, or they may not necessarily want to deal with TFS as a tool because they don't have the time to learn it or whatever it is. But what is really interesting is that TFS is integrated with Office, which is a tool that pretty much everybody knows in business. So I can actually go to Team and then actually create a new list here. And as you can see here, we have a whole bunch of different collections. I'm gonna go to Fabricam Fiber, and I have the ability to check all queries or something like that. So for example, if I wanted to, I can check the product backlog, click on that, and right from TFS, it's actually gonna bring back all the backlog items that are associated with a specific iteration, for example. This is powerful because it allows you to right away send something to somebody that might be asking for this as far as status is concerned. Plus, it allows you to do extra reporting because, as everybody knows, Excel's really good at doing pivot tables and all that kind of stuff too. So it's a beautiful, beautiful thing that allows you to do those types of things.
I feel like that deserves a clap. Yeah.
Yes, it's actually pretty cool.
functionality.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. And of course, this includes things like third-party things such as PowerPoint presentations for using those as storyboards. There's third-party tools that have add-ons to PowerPoint, for example, like PowerStory, that allow you to do some pretty cool things, and that gets integrated into TFS as well as you go forward. So that's pretty cool. So I'm just going to actually go to the next section, which is rethinking dev and test. Now, I talked about Team Foundation Server being a version control system, and as hopefully you saw, you know, lots of people think of it as version control, but it's so much more. And in fact, there's so much power to it that if you really think about the value that the system brings, it's amazing if you think about it. But again, most people think of this as a version control system. So let's think about what version control really is. Traditionally, version control was centralized. So you had situations where you had check in, check out, and edit and commit, and everything went to a centralized server. This is what TFS at its earliest beginnings was basically. It's a centralized version control system that allows you to do that. So it's great for, as you can see, large code bases. I'm not going to get into each of these details because, you know, you can read it. But the intent here is that, you know, it allows you to centralize things to, you know, a team so that everything is in one place. But there is a different type of version control that is also available, and it's actually picking up steam as far as popularity, and that is distributed. So you have distributed teams where basically everybody has their own code base and they can, you know, branch and merge and do things locally on their machines, and then down the road sort of merge them together and as what's called, say, for example, like a baseless merge. And this is becoming very, very popular because of the fact that it allows you to be nimble. There's a lot of ability to branch things and do things very, very quickly. And it allows you to do a lot of things from a modular standpoint. And one of the most popular kinds of distributed version control that's out there is Git. So when the TFS team really thought about, okay, how are we going to evolve TFS, right? We have a really great centralized version control repository system and methodology, but we don't support distributed. So how are we actually going to manage that? And so we thought about it and we said, well, we could roll our own. You know, we could create our own distributed, but, you know, that means that people are going to have to adopt it. And, you know, people are already using distributed control management capabilities today. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. So we took a look at the strongest, you know, distributed version control systems out there, and Git was obviously one of them, and we actually officially partnered with them. So what we've done with 2013 is that we've actually integrated Git natively into the TFS system, both online and in the on-premise versions, which is great because if you're a Git developer today or if you use Git for your source control, you can use TFS right away because TFS is now an endpoint for Git, which is awesome. So let's see how this works from a centralized or distributed. So you have Visual Studio, which is the most common tool that is being used for .NET development, as you can imagine. So we'll just use this as the beginning of the scenario. And you have Team Foundation Server or Service, which is now called Visual Studio Online. So those two sort of work together. You have a project that's hosted within Team Foundation Server and version control, and you have all the goodness surrounding it around management and issue management, builds, test cases, all that kind of stuff. So the way you get at that within Visual Studio is that you use a tool called Team Explorer. And Team Explorer includes two things under the covers that allows it to communicate with TFS, so the provider and the object model. And of course, you can also use third-party tools such as Eclipse or a shell or whatever it is that you want using distributed version control, which is good. Now, project two, for example, say, is using Git. So you have the choice when you actually create a project within TFS now, whether or not you decide to use centralized or traditional TFS version control or Git. So basically it's the same thing. There's no real difference from the standpoint of how the code is sort of delivered to you or how the code is managed from a project management standpoint. All the stuff is the same from that standpoint. But what is interesting is that, you know, we do provide that support now through Visual Studio as well in TFS. It's natively supported. And You can also provide support for local repositories or, you know, another remote repository such as GitHub or Bitbucket or whatever it is that you think that you're using. So you have a lot of choice with Git to actually determine how you're actually going to push your changes to whatever sort of service that you have. And of course, you know, and this is part of the thing that's really interesting is that, you know, if you're building iOS applications, one of the things that we've found is that most iOS app developers are using Git for their source version control. So Xcode, you know, Eclipse, you know, whatever it is, this is really, really important because, you know, it sort of shows right away that regardless of what you're building, TFS is actually a great and scalable solution for your code right out of the box, either online or on-premise, for you to actually deliver the results that you need as a source control repository, which is really, really cool. And then, of course, we also have GitTF, which is our command line tool. So again, a lot of people are very, very familiar with the Git command line tools. And if that's what you're comfortable with, we do provide the support for that as well.
So Paul, before you go into the demo, mm-hmm. So here's a question for you.
Yep.
You mentioned Git native support.
Yes.
Yeah, so keyword there, native. Mm-hmm. Right, so it's not like some sort of hack job,
nope. You know,
control scripts here and there, macros, plugins,
no.
Blah, 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 to get
out
all
of
that
the box.
Done.
Out of the box, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I'm like, when you said native, I just wanted to make sure, because
There
have been times where native isn't so native, and then all of a sudden you're having to put all of these things together to actually make it work, but if I'm not mistaken, right, mm-hmm. So it, Visual Studio, if I understood you correctly, and TFS will actually treat gig. Coffee time. Too bad it's empty.
Yes.
We'll treat Git no differently than TFS as we know TFS today.
You got it.
And then even though the source control is in Git, all of the other features of TFS work the exact same?
Yep. It's actually great. You know,
brilliant.
It is brilliant. So let's show you a little bit of how this works. So I'm going to bring up, for example, now I'm going to bring this up on my own personal. So I'm going to go to my own repository here. Oh, that's because I'm signing in as a different person. That's okay. We can figure this out. So sign out and log in as somebody else. Wait for this. All right. Sign in. So I'm going to sign in as myself. Nope, of course. All right, so as you can see here, I have two projects. Color Encryptor and Bulls and Bears. These are two things that I'm working on. I'm not going to show you those because the code is quite horrible and everything else like that, and really doesn't provide any sort of value there. Now, what is interesting is that, you know, for example, you see here, I can create a new project. So I'm going to create a new project, and I'm going to call this, say, for example, Breakpoint Demo. And you can give it a description. JR is cool.
Awesome.
And then here's a process template. So you can use Scrum, which is part of the Agile methodologies. There's another Agile methodology for Microsoft Foundation that you see here. Or you can use for CMMI process improvement, which is more traditional. So you have the ability to do all that. I'm just going to leave it as Scrum because we're actually not going to do much with this anyways. But as you can see here, version control. Right out of the box, you can choose either Team Foundation Control or Git. So I'm going to choose Git, and I'm going to create the project.
No, this is with TFS Online.
TFS Online, but you can do this through Visual Studio, through Team Explorer Everywhere, which I'll show you, which is also available on Eclipse, which is actually something I should bring up as well. So we'll just bring that up as well while we're doing this. So it's just creating the project templates and everything else like that. So just yada, yada, yada. Wait for it to show up.
I feel like this part needs theme music.
Da, 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 da. All right. Your project is created and your team is absolutely going to love this.
Yeah.
So let's navigate to the project. So again, this is the online version of Team Foundation service. So it's now Visual Studio Online, as you can see the branding right there. But it's basically similar to what I showed you from TFS in the cloud. So you can see there's your burn downs. Of course, I don't have any burn down because I haven't set up sprints or iterations or everything else like that.
Well, we did just start.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Come on.
But as you can see here, if I can go to the code, you know, there's no code and everything else like that. Now this is really interesting, so we'll leave this here for now because I'm going to show you something very, very quickly. So the other thing is, now I'm in Visual Studio 2013 Ultimate, and I'm actually going to go here, and I'm going to go to Project and Teams, and I'm going to connect to Team Projects. And as you can see, it's looking. Ah, there's two there. And then there's, well, for some reason it didn't actually show up, which is unfortunate. But I can even create a new team project, for example, here, right? So I can create local Git repositories, or I can create a team project here on TFS as well. So I could actually do that, and it's actually going to make me go right here to do that. So even in in Visual Studio, you can actually do that. So I can go to Select Team Projects. There we go. There's a breakpoint demo. I just needed to connect, so I'm going to connect to it. And as you can see right here, it's a Git project. If you didn't notice before, it's kind of tough to see. This little orange thing is basically the Git symbol, so you can actually go to that. And you can clone this repository for development if you want and everything else like that. So that's all well and good and everything else like that. But what's interesting is that, you know, you can take a look at the changes and everything. So what I can also do is I can, what I showed you before around work items, so there's no work items in this because I haven't created it, but you can see the same types of things that we saw in the demo before around online TFS. You can see the product backlog, that you can create IDs and everything else like that. All this, the information that was available to you before is now available to you here as well. So again, I'm going to go to Eclipse and I'm going to show you the same thing. So I'm in my Bulls and Bears project here, and again, I can take a look at the source code controller, and as you can see right here, I'm showing it. So this is actually a C# project that I've actually have right here, but obviously this is Eclipse, but you can do this with a Java project as well. You have the ability to show your builds. I don't have any recent builds lately because I've just started this project and everything else like that. But it's actually cool because this Team Explorer allows you to traverse Team Foundation server, whether it's Git or TFS version controlling, to allow you to manage your applications, which is kind of cool. So again, this would be very, very valuable to you if you're building a Java project with Eclipse or whatever it is as well. Okay, so actually I'll just minimize that for now. Now the other thing that I'm going to show you is, for example, we'll go to the command prompt. So is the font too small? Maybe we'll change the font.
Yeah, maybe we should bump that up a bit. Hey, Paul, while you're doing that,
yep.
So the functionality that you were showing there in Eclipse, right, with Team Explorer Everywhere, that's a plugin that people can get and just download and install?
Yeah, so Team Explorer Everywhere is available to you anywhere that you actually you need it for Eclipse, and it's already built into Visual Studio. You can download the plugin for free from Microsoft. All you got to do is search for Team Explorer Everywhere download, and you should be good to go.
Just that simple.
It's that simple.
And then a plain simple install, connect into your endpoint, and you're good to go.
You're
no
good to go.
Crazy setup, no enabling of Eclipse versus Visual Studio. Or
exactly, right? So it's actually
simple.
it's quite seamless in that respect as well.
Well, that definitely makes things interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah. So I'm in the root of my drive right now. So I'm actually going to go to CD repos.
Because we can't see. No, I'm just kidding. Here we are.
Yeah, okay.
Just kidding.
All right.
I love the live shows where it's like, wait, I can't switch it yet. You're going faster.
Okay, so I'm just going to create a quick text file here, for example. So this is a readme.txt file, whatever, right? So I'm going to save it, and it's going to ask me where I want to save it. It doesn't really matter. I'm just going to save it in the C drive and then to my repos folder right here. So I'll just call this readme.txt. So now if I go to here and I do a directory, you can see, for example, we have the readme text file right now. Okay?
So you should really update the clock on your system. You're still a week back from where we are. You know it's a demo machine when
absolutely
you have all your dates wrong or your virtual machine still says July 9th, 2013.
Well, you know, it's just the way demo machines are like that, right?
Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying.
It's all good. It's all good. So I'm going to see, here's a command line. So I installed Git from git-scm for sourcecontrolmanagement.org. That's where you can get it, and it's just a quick download, and so it's very, very easy to do that. So that's basically showing me that I do have Git in set up here. So what I want to do now is I'm going to create a new project, and this project is going to be local. So I'm going to say Git init JR rocks, just for the heck of it, right? Okay. So it's initialized it. So if I do a directory, we have JR rocks. So I'm going to go cd JR rocks, and
I'm
let's
so
take a look.
Honored.
There's nothing in there. Well, that's kind of
what
interesting.
What are you trying to say, Paul?
Well, it's because it's a new project. Now, the interesting thing is the way Git sort of sets things up is they have a whole bunch of sort of hidden files and folders. So if I do dir.star, you can see here there isn't anything here yet. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go copy .readme.txt to copy. That should have worked. .txt. That's interesting. I don't know why that didn't work. So let's just actually copy it using File Explorer because it's always easier.
So. See, I was thinking that, and I didn't want to say it because I'm so not a command guy, but I know everybody else is.
So let's see there. Now let's do that directory and see. Yeah, there it
Yay.
Is.
Yay!
Okay.
See, my way works better than
now
yours.
if I do a git stat, I think I know why. It's because I had to go down one further. So as you can see here, now we have readme.txt, and it might not show up very well on the screen, but you may notice that it's red. So this is basically saying nothing added to the commit, but untracked files are present. So I've actually added this file to the project, but it's actually not tracked by the project, by Git itself. So what I want to do is I want to say git add readme.txt. So I've done that. Now let's do git status again, just to see. And it says, we got this new file, right? So git this readme.txt. So now, if I want to do something, I can actually commit this. So say, for example, I want to say, git minus m initial project, okay, and then press enter. Ooh, git commit, that's what I forgot, minus m blah. Let's just say blah instead. There you go. Okay. Set this OK. Unable to auto-detect email address. That's fine because I didn't set that up. And then say git status. And as you can see right here, changes to be committed and everything. So
now, for the record, nobody should be using comments as blah.
No, no.
That is not what Paul is trying to promote here.
You should be using blah again.
OK.
There you go.
And then you wonder when your dev lead comes and be like, so what's that blah? What is it that you didn't? Maybe we should have a conversation about that one.
Exactly. Now, what's interesting is, okay, that's just the local stuff, for example. And this, I didn't set up my username locally for that, so that's something that I had to have to do, but you could tell what sort of what happened. Now, what's interesting here is that I can actually clone things from TFS. So as I said before, TFS is a endpoint for Git. So what we can do here is I can say git clone, and then if you remember when we went to TFS right here, when we created the breakpoint demo, you can actually clone this entire thing. So let's see here. So I'm going to say control C to copy it, and then I'm going to say edit, paste. There. Now this is actually going to break, and I'll explain why in a second. See, it's actually cloning it in. Username. So I'm going to put in my username at outlook.com, which is what you would probably expect because that's what I logged in as. And then it's going to ask me for the password. And all of a sudden, it's going to say incorrect, fatal, because I couldn't do it. Now this is a tricky part, and it's something that I think a lot of people might get tripped up on, is because Visual Studio, it's a Git repository, but it's using a Microsoft account for actually logging in to the system. So you don't necessarily have a Git account sort of set up. So we need to set up basic, enable basic authentication for you to actually do that from the command line. So I'm going to click on that, and it's that's actually bringing the help, which is not what I wanted. Wait for it to come back. I'm going to go to my account here, and I'm going to go to my profile. Okay, and as you can see here, for credentials, you can set up alternate credentials right here. So I can set, for example, set the username. So I can set this up as P. LeBerge, for example, and I can set this up as whatever I want it to be. So we'll do that. And then you can disable alternate credentials if you ever want to down the road. Oh, of course it is. So I'm going to say P. LeBerge.
Rocks.
Rocks. Okay, sure.
I can't be the only one that rocks.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, I wouldn't have you on the show.
There you go. Okay, so now I've set up basic authentication. So I'm going to go back here, and I'm going to press F3. To clone it, do this again. Now it's going to ask me, so P. LeBerge rocks. And now my password, which is password #1. No, it's not.
And?
Checking
ta-da.
In. Okay. So I basically appeared to clone an empty repository. So if there was actually files in this, it would have downloaded all that stuff from TFS into this. Now I can do my work. So if I'm, for example, I'm an Xcode developer, and I'm using, you know, Xcode for iOS and everything, I can use a command line in my shell of, you know, choice to do the git commands that I need to do to download the stuff, and then I can commit again via the command line, which is actually pretty cool. So let's get back to the actual presentation. Okay. So we talked a lot about some of this stuff already around the Microsoft solution. And as you can see, you know, hopefully it came across that we have a lot of goodness that's associated with all the stuff that comes with Visual Studio Online and the Team Foundation server and service and Visual Studio 2013. We're not going to go through each of these things. I went through a few of these things in greater detail, I guess, say, or just glanced over it, to be honest. But that sort of gives you an idea of some of the things that are available. Now, I do want to show you some of the things around Test Manager, because again, one of the great things about this system is that, you know, even though you might be testing in Java or whatever it is, you know, you still have the ability to do test cases and things like that through TFS and manage those test cases across. So let's go very, very quickly back into my virtual machine, because there's some pretty cool stuff here. And what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to scroll down to my taskbar, going to go into the Test Manager, and scroll back up because we have this here. Now we're in the Tailspin Toys project. So this is a little bit different than the other project that I showed you within my virtual machine. And I can take a look here. For example, we have a test plan manager. So just wait for it to show up. Iteration 1. So I click on that. And I want to get in the plan here. It's basically, so as you can see, there's all sorts of different plans and everything else like that. So for example, you take a look at ID 41, which is basically entering test case 41. You know, entering invalid data into a shopping cart that causes things to crash and everything. Well, that's pretty cool and things like that. So let's go to tests, and there's a whole bunch of tests here that we can do. So you can see some of these failed and some of these passed. So if I click on this, or if I click on this, I can actually, well, let's do this one instead just because we passed before or whatever. But I can run the test case, and if you notice, it's going to minimize the window for this, and it's actually going to bring it over here so I can actually start a test. So as a tester, I can test, say, for example, a website or something like that. So here we go. It's starting to test do the test. And as you can see here, it's going to open the Tailspin Toys. So basically, you can say, play this. Okay. Not connected to a network, that's fine. You know, for example, so this would be an issue. So if I take a look at this, we can fail it, but basically what we can do here is we can say capture a screenshot right from here and show this big, big issue. You know, there's a screenshot issue right there. I can, you know, open it up in Paint, and then I can sort of circle something if I wanted to, you know, whatever it is that you feel you need to do. So I can go to shapes and just sort of say whatever, blah. Take a look at this, obviously there's something wrong. And then I can add some comments, and then I can basically say it failed. And then you can give reason, site is down, for example, or whatever, those types of things. So I'm going to stop this because I don't actually want to do anything with it and everything else like that. So that's pretty cool. And now we're going to save and close. So that's pretty cool. So you have the ability to do that. And then you can also track things within your testing center. So the ability to sort of show, you know, what sort of things have happened. So if I go to my bugs, you can find out if there were any bugs. There were no results, which is kind of cool. And again, product backlog, take a look at the product backlog. So again, this is getting information from Team Foundation server. So I can, you know, find out what, you know, the as a customer, I should be able to create a new account so you can do all that kind of stuff as well. Now, that's great, but there's also the ability to do other things. So I'm going to exit this. I don't want to save that. You can actually do things within Visual Studio as well. So if you remember when I showed you, there was a test case 41, which was one of the test cases there. So I'm actually going to go to File, New, Project within Visual Studio 2013 Ultimate. And you can see here that I'm in the test folder here, and this allows me to see the coded UI test area. And this is interesting because I can create coded UI tests for, say, for example, you know, like websites and things. So I'm actually going to do that. So I'm going to click on this, say OK, and it's going to open this up to create the project. And what's cool is it's going to bring this up. Ah, OK, here's a box, right? So what I want to do is record actions, edit UI map, and add assertion. So I can do this and add, you know, it'll do it automatically. Or in this case, use an existing action recording. So this is actually getting this from Team Foundation Server. So I can basically say, I remember the test case was ID 41, so I'll just type that in. Okay, we'll find it. There it is. And this is getting it directly from Team Foundation Server. I click OK, and as you'll notice, it's getting information. Ah, some things have changed. So we got some changes here. And let's take a look. Oh my goodness, look at all that. All this has been sort of translated into a coded UI test from the test case that we've actually provided within Visual Studio, because we've actually recorded these tests before. So now if I start this, we'll see very, very quickly. It's going to be doing its run. Can't be started directly. OK, sorry, wrong run. We should have done all tests there.
Drum roll, please. And
so as you can see now, it's not run tests. It's doing
working
on it.
There we go.
What's going to happen? Ah, take a look. Now this may not show up. Okay, there we go. Tailspin Toys. Aha! You may not notice it's actually going through a whole bunch of things. It's actually doing the automated test of clicking through the website based on the test case that you've created to test to make sure that there's nothing wrong with it. I don't know. That's pretty cool to me because I didn't have to code anything. Right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. And again, this could be a Java-based, you know, a JSP or a PHP website or whatever it is. It doesn't matter because this is a website, for example. Team Foundation Server, in conjunction with Visual Studio, can create these tests and actually help create that. So that's a pretty exciting thing, in my opinion. All right. So we are running out of time here.
Just a little.
So web development is interesting. I'm just going to go through this very, very quickly. One of the things that we've added since Visual Studio 2012 was the Web Essentials. So this is a free add-on to Visual Studio that allows you to add some real value to your development for websites. So I'm actually going to show this to you very, very quickly before we go to anything else. Okay, so we'll just bring up Visual Studio here. And I'm going to go File, Open, Website. Now I'm just going to open a local one, say the test site on IIS Express, as you can see right here. OK, so we'll go to the Solution Explorer. As you can see here, we have, you know, typical things or whatever. Now if I go to, for example, I go to Content, there's a CSS page right here. So as you can see, this is standard cascading style sheets. But if I take a look at this, if I hover over a certain attribute, it tells me, you know, what browsers this specific attribute supports. And if it's supported only on a certain version of the browser going forward, then it'll tell you that. So say, for example, if I, what's a good example? Maybe there isn't one because these are pretty standard things. But if I scroll down a little bit, maybe there's yeah. So basically, if it was, say for example, it worked only on Chrome 11 and higher, it would actually show an 11 underneath the Chrome as well so that you can tell right away. So you have some abilities there. Now, what's really interesting as well is if I take a look, if I go to, say, for example, HTMLpage.htm, one of the things that's really, really painful for a lot of you know, developers for web is that, you know, getting the tags set up and doing things can be kind of painful. So we've actually provided some support for this. So say, for example, you wanted to create an unordered list. Typically, you'd have to go unordered list, and then you'd have that, and then you'd do your LIs and whatever else. And then you'd add in the whatever content that you want. Well, that's all well and good, but we have some shortcuts that can actually help you. So with the Visual Studio Web Essentials, you can say unordered list, I want say four LI times four, and then say I want lorem ipsum in it. Oop. And then you tab, all of a sudden, let's take a look at this.
No.
Yeah,
way.
That's pretty cool, right?
There we go.
So
I can't even tell you how many times I went to a website to copy that stuff.
Yeah, so these are shortcuts that allow you to do this, right? So UL LI times two, for example, and then I could say lorem times three. Wonder what that happened. Then I tab that, all of a sudden we have this. Then we have three lines of lorem ipsum in each of them. So if you wanted to actually do these types of things, it's actually really, really quick to do that. Now, these are just a very, very few set of things that allow you to do these. I'm not going to go through all of it, obviously, because we don't have time. There's actually a really good session by Mads Christensen on Channel 9. If you just search for Web Essentials for Visual Studio, you can probably find it pretty, pretty quickly. Okay, so let's get back. Now, the cloud. How much time do we have?
Not much, but you know I'm not going to say no to talking about the cloud.
Okay. So cloud, we talked about Windows Azure, and this is interesting is, you know, we talked about provisioning environments. As a developer, as a manager of a new solution or software, this can be painful. And you know, it's very difficult to get through this. The cloud is actually a way that can really, really help you with this. So if you take a look, I'm actually not gonna go through this because there's lots out there. What I actually want to show you, we'll get to this back in a second, is I'm actually going to show you Windows Azure and how you can sort of spin up a dev test environment very, very quickly. So without further ado, let's go to...
Paul's all about the demos today.
Yeah.
I love it.
So if I go to azure.com, which is basically the Azure portal for anything to do with Azure, and it's going to ask me to sign in, so I'm signing in. I always did like that spinning wheel thing. I think that's pretty cool.
I actually log into the portal just to watch that.
Yeah. Well, I don't do that. And as you can see, there's all sorts of different sort of services and availability or services available for you to use. And I won't go through these because we're actually probably going to do a future breakpoint session on everything to do with the cloud. So we'll do that. But I do want to bring up the virtual machines because the interesting thing here is that you can actually create a demo machine very, very quickly, or not a demo machine, but a development machine really, really quickly. So I have already created one, so I'm just going to start this. Hold on a second here. Start it. So we'll get this to start. And while we're doing that, I'm actually going to show you how to create one all on your own, which is actually quite interesting. So I'm going to go to New. Virtual machine, so in the compute area, virtual machine, and I can quick create, which basically creates a blank one that I can do, that I can create, or from the gallery. Now the gallery, you can choose an image. Now the cool thing is you can also have my images. So we have a whole bunch of different things here, like from Microsoft, we provide Windows Server, just blank as it is. We have setups for SharePoint, so you can actually create a SharePoint virtual machine. So if you need to test your SharePoint stuff, you can do that quickly. A SQL Server host, in a virtual machine one, a BizTalk server. And then we also have things like Visual Studio, which is interesting. You can create a premium, professional, or ultimate virtual machine with this already created. And then, of course, we provide support for Oracle as well as a number of different Linux variants. So you can also create your own images. So say, for example, you're in an organization and you have a very set of specific sort of configurations that your development environments require. You can upload a virtual machine hard drive, a VHD or a VHDX as it were, and actually push that up to the cloud, host that under your account, and then you can have your users provision those machines very, very quickly as well. So in this case, I'm going to go to Visual Studio Ultimate, and basically it's giving me some information about it, and you can read that if you want. I'm going to call the virtual machine JR Rocks, just because. And you can pick the size. So large for falls, 4 cores, 7 gigabytes of memory. I'm just going to go with a small one because I don't really care right now. I'm going to give it a new username, PLaBerge, and I'm going to give it a password so I can actually log into this thing. And obviously I typed this one in wrong. There we go. Okay. All right. And we can create a new cloud service, or we can use an existing one that I already have. So I'm just going to create the new cloud service. That's fine. Cloud service name. Apparently, this is available. Nobody else thinks that you rock.
Of course it's available. Okay. No, it was just that I made sure to contact everybody and tell them to delete it, because I knew you were going to do a demo like that.
Naturally, yeah. That's the story he's going to stick to. And then we also have our data center. So the various different data centers around the world that we have that can provide that support for you. I'm going to pick Eastern US because that's closest to Toronto, so that there's less latency. And then you can set up a storage account, so you can create one from one you've already created before, so you can use that, or you can create a new one that's automatically generated. And then availability sets. So you can create availability sets that allow you to sort of guarantee always on capability and things like that in the case of disaster recovery or backups and stuff like that. So we won't worry about that because this is literally just a quick demo. And then we have, for example, the various different sort of endpoints that allow you to log in, or you can create a new one if you want. Remote desktop is just fine, so we'll just do that. And it's provisioning it. Now, we take a look here. Let's go back to this right here. The demo test environment that I just started, so this one's starting to provision, but the one that I started before I did that, I can actually connect to it. So I'm going to connect to this via remote desktop. So I'm going to open it. It's going to say unknown publisher account. So I can use another account. Now this account was basically the one that when we created the, it asked for a username and password. You do that. So I'm going to go P. LaBerge, and then whatever my password is. And say yes, that's fine. Estimating the connection quality. Aha, here we go. Wait for it to just show up. It's gonna refresh the screen soon. At least that's the theory.
I was gonna say, again, what a theme song time.
Yeah. Do, 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 do. All right. Okay, there we go.
Here we go. See, you just need to be patient.
Absolutely.
It's not like virtual machines are magic or anything.
Well, they kind of are.
No, so, they're magical.
Magical. There you go. So as you can see right here, this has already got Visual Studio 2013 installed. And I think this one was a premium or professional version that I installed for this demo machine. Premium, yeah. So as you can see, it's bringing it up. So all of a sudden, you may not have Visual Studio in your premises or in your organization, or at least 2013, for example. But say, for example, you needed access to it because you needed to do some of these awesome coded UI tests and stuff like that. You can provision this. You pay for what you use, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Likewise, the other thing that's really interesting is that Visual Studio, the IDE, you can actually create load tests for Visual Studio very, very quickly. And if you don't have Visual Studio Ultimate to do these load test capabilities, you can spin up a virtual machine, do that, and then it doesn't even affect the network performance because you're not creating virtual users on your network to hit the actual service that you're running. It's only whatever service is being targeted. So there's that. So I'm just going to exit this because I don't need this anymore. And let's see how our virtual machine's doing. So it's starting. So it's actually taking very, very short amount of time to actually get this going. So that's pretty cool, right? So I'm going to stop, shut down my demo test one because I don't want to keep it going because there's no need for that. And we'll go back to the slides. And we'll get back to that new demo environment to show you how to do that. So I showed you very, very quickly how to do those types of things. Now, I'm going to go very quickly because now I'm really running out of time.
You really are. I mean, it's such goodness that I don't want to stop.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about what is either there or coming in Visual Studio Online. So this is the in-the-cloud version of TFS that we talked about. So I talked a little bit about browser-based coding. So what you can see here is a screenshot of what's to come, for example. So you get full IntelliSense in the browser for your code and things like that. So it connects to your Team Foundation server projects and everything else like that. So if you need to make, you know, I wouldn't say hardcore edits, but if you needed to make edits that were fairly simple, you could even do this, like I said, on your phone, which is quite amazing. I think this is quite cool if you think about it, right? Load testing I talked about. See, we actually are providing through Visual Studio Online the ability to spin up load tests without even having to create a virtual machine if you don't want to. So we actually provision the hardware behind the scenes and in the virtual machines behind the scenes. All you have to do is say, I want to start a virtual a load test. You tell it where you're supposed to hit it. You tell it the mix of different types of browsers or whatever it is that are trying to hit the website, for example, if that's what you're trying to do. And you can scale it as big as you want. And you basically you pay for the virtual user minutes that you have, right? So there's a lot to do with that. And there's an example of a load test report that's completed that sort of shows it to you. It's stored in the cloud, stored in TFS, and then you can download the report and share that with friends and family if that's what you so wish to do to show how awesome your system is performing. So again, automated build. So we have build services within Visual Studio Online as well for your TFS, so you can actually do that. Again, this is a service that's available on the on-premise as well, but we've actually brought this to the cloud. So we're really practicing what we preach, and the fact that, you know, we're saying we're all in on the cloud. This is an example of a really great service that that we've provided as an on-premise capability. You have the ability to do that now in the cloud, and then so that you offset some provisioning that you might have to do otherwise. And there's just a screenshot of what it looks like. Application insights. Now this is really interesting because this is an area that is very important to driving the health monitoring of your application. So once your application is up and running, you have the ability to provide dashboards around how healthy your application is based on key performance indicators, and you can share that with your operations management. That's coming. It's not quite there yet, but it's what I've seen so far is really, really cool. So I think you're going to want to see that. And there's a little bit more information about Application Insights. And here's some of the basic capabilities. So if you have Visual Studio and you have Professional, Premium, or Ultimate, there's various different versions that you actually get. So for example, you know, all the exclusive capabilities, so all the stuff that you saw before, and then for example, web test case management, you get with Ultimate and all those types of things as well. So if you want this deck, you can always give me a shout and then we can go from there. So conclusion, ALM your way. I'm not going to go over this slide again because we already went through it, but hopefully this gave you an idea of some of the things that are really, really awesome for you to think about when you're actually implementing your source code management, and not only just source code, but your overall application lifecycle management. So I did promise you to show you that MSDN slide quickly, so I'm going to do that very, very quickly. One of the things that you get with MSDN, which is basically the Microsoft Developer Network, which comes with Professional, Premium, or Ultimate versions of Visual Studio, is you get benefits for Azure Dev Test, among the other things that you provided, such as the software to do your testing in a non-production environment. So you can see this, you know, you get $50 a month in credit for Professional, $100 a month in credit for Premium, and $150 a month in credit for Ultimate for running these virtual machines and all the various different services in Azure. So this is really important because, you know, it's not that expensive, first of all, but you can really do an awful lot with these credits. Like $150 a month doesn't sound like a lot, but it actually can, you can do an awful lot with that to actually make that work. So I know that was a real whirlwind tour.
I'm trying to catch my breath. I'm like, yeah. Okay.
But certainly there's a lot of goodness there. So so thank you very much for joining. I'm out of breath too.
And now Paul's going to take a little bit of a breather.
Yeah. But
so now, if we were to recap all of that, because Originally we started talking about cross-platform, and we started talking about all of these different things, and then we kind of went, I'm not going to say all over the place, but we went to the breadth of what we can do.
Yes.
But I think the bottom line is actually everything that you were showing, or what the purpose of showing all of that was, that it all ties down to the fact that all of it works across all the different platforms.
Yeah, you know, you're building Objective-C through Xcode, you're doing Java development in Eclipse, you're doing .NET development in Visual Studio, you're a web developer, you're doing PHP, Ruby development, it doesn't matter, it all works. It's a beautiful thing.
I think maybe we should title the episode then as It All Works.
You could do that, yeah.
Right? If we had to sum up, okay, fine, here we do it. Let's do this. If we have to sum up the entire thing in one line, sentence.
It just works.
So that works for me.
When we put this on Channel 9 after this live broadcast, we're going to be able to call it It Just Works.
Okay, so now, for those of you that are watching this, I want to start seeing tweets. So tweet whatever you want. Paul rocks, Paul's amazing, blah, blah, blah. You could add in some JR in there as well. But he's been doing it phenomenally over the last little while. So anyway, thank you for that. Hashtag breakpoint, and then hashtag it just works.
There you go.
I think we should just let the tweets all go nuts.
Let's do it.
Yeah?
I'd love to see it.
Okay. So since we are superbly over, thank you for actually sticking with us, going through the entire tour of why it all just works.
Yeah.
I love it. Anyway, I got stuck at the hashtag. And so basically, we're going to have all this content up for you. If you want to get a hold of this deck, they can actually just email you, right?
Yep.
It's paul.laberge at microsoft.com.
Yeah, right? Or plaberge. Either one works. So.
Or on Twitter, plaberge. Just tweet him up and say, hey, dude, send me that deck because I want to tell my boss all about it. And
absolutely.
Bring it into my world. And if that's the case, well, then that's cool. We're going to stay online for a bit. If you do, in fact, have questions, feel free to chat away there. Put them in the message box. Paul and I will answer them. If you're watching this on demand afterwards on YouTube or channel 9, just put a comment right underneath the video, and I'm going to bug him to answer because he's the pro and I'm just here for entertainment.
Yeah.
So I'll make sure that he answers all of those for you. And then, do we know what we're going to talk about next time? Maybe we should keep that a surprise.
I was going to say, let's keep it a surprise because there's some cool stuff coming down the road.
Dun, dun, dun. Of course, we're going to do that to them every month. So maybe we should just end the show every time with. So on next month's episode of Breakpoint. Oh, sorry, that's a surprise. So stay tuned.
Redacted, yes.
Okay, and by the way, we've moved to the last week of the month. So as you can see, it is the last Friday of the month. So tune in, and hopefully we'll continue to bring the goodness to you of Breakpoint. And of course, I have to do it. Okay, so you weren't here on the show last time.
No.
And for those of you who didn't watch it, I started off by saying what a brilliant name Breakpoint is, right?
Because
it's a breakpoint of your day, breakpoint of your code, obviously, and we showed you a lot of that. It's a breakpoint of your day to actually take some time to learn something and then go right away and implement it. So thanks for taking your breakpoint with us. We'll see you next month, and we look forward to your questions. See ya.
See ya.